Hello, this is Dr. Shilpa Saxena, and today we're going to be mapping group visits on the 15-minute matrix.
Welcome to the 15-minute matrix. I'm Andrea Nakayama, functional medicine nutritionist and your host. This is the podcast that brings you bite-sized insights and lessons on how to use the most important tool in functional medicine and functional nutrition. Today on the 15-Minute Matrix, I'll be speaking with Dr. Shilpa Saxena. Dr. Saxena is a board-certified family physician whose passion and purpose came to life through an uncompromising commitment to promoting the health and care aspects of healthcare. In addition to over 15 years of progressive patient care in her successful medical practice, Dr. Saxena is faculty with the Institute for Functional Medicine, faculty with the Academy of Integrative and Holistic Medicine, fellow and guest faculty of the Arizona Center for Integrative Medicine, and faculty with George Washington University's Metabolic Medicine Institute. As a consummate teacher, she is known for her keep it simple approach when marrying the science of modern medicine with the art of patient education and partnership. She created Group Visit Toolkits, a turnkey lifestyle-based group medical appointment resource to help patients and physicians alike rediscover the splendor of health and healing over the drain of disease and drugs. Welcome, Dr. Saxena. I'm thrilled to have you here on the 15-Minute Matrix.
Thank you so much, Andrea. I'm so excited to be here and to be able to support your mission.
In episode 9 of the podcast, I spoke to our friend James Maskell about community, and I'm eager to speak to you about the many benefits that come physiologically, psychologically, and professionally from group visits or group programs. And I'm wondering if we can first begin with the benefits you've seen for the practitioner and then switch gears to speak into the patient benefits. I know you have a sort of three-part system that you think about when you think about group visits. Can you speak into that for us to begin?
Absolutely. It's very easy to start thinking about our lives as a practitioner in three segments. We have clinical, operational, and financial. And as a practitioner, for us to feel better about ourselves, we need to know that we're doing good medicine, that our clinical benefit to our patients is at the highest potential that we have. So group medical appointments have been shown to increase compliance, increase knowledge scores, increase better outcomes. So this is really good for the clinical fulfillment part of you that wants to know that, hey, I'm actually serving my higher purpose as a healer. And then in terms of operationally, I think many of us, although we'd love to see more patients, serve more patients, it can be definitely a drag when you feel like you're rushing and you're just living by that clock. That whole treadmill kind of visual comes to mind. So having the ability to just settle into a 90-minute appointment with 15 of your patients that you know can learn so much from each other, and you just facilitating this, and that's an operational boon for you as well too, that you don't have to kind of lead it and run it, that you are just facilitating this, this would be a wonderful thing. And then financially, again, that you don't have to see more and more individual appointments in order to get the benefits of the financial aspect, which you do have to consider. I mean, we cannot think that functional medicine will survive or functional nutrition will survive if we aren't also prosperous in that financial realm as well. So these are the ways that I think the practitioner starts to, quote unquote, feel physiologically better: stress reduction, fulfillment, and of course, finances.
It's so interesting because I've been reading a lot lately about different attachment styles in relationship. And the relationship, of course, extends beyond the intimate relationship to the practitioner-patient relationship. And whatever kind of relationship we're in, when we're in a dyad, we're in relationship with that person's relationship to relationship, for lack of a better way of saying it. So they may be imposing things when you're in the dyad that are part of their history or their way of relating that I'm imagining get diffused when we're in a group. We don't get to kind of resort to our old behaviors that we had with our parents that we engage in with our siblings or our partners because we are part of something else that we're growing and building. Have you seen that to be the case for patients and then alleviate some of that pressure for the practitioner?
Yes, I do believe that there's many different patient personas, and there's this one set of personas that has the main idea that physician, clinician, you are in charge of fixing me.
Right.
And so the burden is on that person in the relationship, similar to what you might feel like with an older sibling or a parent. And so they just bring that in because that was the culture of the past healthcare system. But now there's this sense that we really are trying to empower the patient. And this is what a group of their peers going through the same issues or at least trying to address the same root cause helps them get out of this acculturation of I am a victim. And what it does is it starts to create this self-efficacy and the sense that I can do it. And what that does simultaneously is relieve the physician or clinician from the burden and sometimes the reflex of feeling like I've got to go in there and fix this situation. And I think seeing some empowered people within the group, because empowered people sometimes come to a group to understand the education and then they're ready to take it and go with it. Whereas some of the disempowered mindset patients need to see an empowered patient model the behavior. And of course, the physician can't always model it because they may not have the RA or the lifestyle issue. So I absolutely think that it's just like kids. You put them in an environment and who you hang around starts to influence how you behave.
Really amazing. When it comes down to the central part of the functional nutrition matrix, what I think of as the soup, where everything's happening physiologically, have you seen particular impacts on the body systems through group visits that you weren't seeing in individual care?
What I would tell you is that physiologically, things are more likely to improve when you have compliance. Mm-hmm. And so what I found in individual visits is that compliance was hard when I would even use sometimes motivational interviewing because they had to be accountable to me, themselves, obviously. But in a group, it's a different feeling that they get. It's like they have the power of the tribe to account to and to be supported by. And so the physiology, of course, changes for compliance, but there is something to be said about, like, as you've probably seen in the research related to blue zones, that some of the top things that keeps people living to healthy centenarian status is community and purpose and that social health piece. And it doesn't always have to be like five best friends. It can absolutely be people who are going through the same thing. I was just talking to one of these friends of my daughter's, and he's going to try to be in the Naval Academy. And he was saying that sometimes you make your best friends in times of suffering.
Yep.
This is real true. And I think sometimes when you're in a group medical appointment and you're talking about your suffering with the condition or suffering with being low glycemic or gluten-free, this bonds you to a group different than just talking to your friend at a cocktail party about being gluten-free.
I imagine if we're thinking about the story, the left side of the functional nutrition matrix, that there's connection that people make in their triggers. Oh, I had that too. I had food poisoning. I traveled to Mexico. Mm-hmm. I had these adverse childhood experiences as well. That there's connections that we make about triggers. But then as you're saying, the compliance really amplifies our ability to integrate the mediators that are going to mediate whatever signs, symptoms, or diagnoses we're experiencing. Is that what you see, that connections start to happen?
Yes, the connections happen because they see it in the lives of somebody who is a peer, as opposed to being told about it theoretically by a physician who may or may not have the condition.
Right, right.
I think it's a big believability factor that you say, oh, this could be the trigger because it was for her, and then she stopped the gluten, and all of a sudden her RA is a lot better.
Right, right, right. So you can see it and then you're more motivated to implement the skills and really make change. What about things around exercise, movement? Is that a part of the group visits or do you see that being incorporated or partnerships forming in terms of people going on walks together or taking initiative to get into the gym together?
Well, if that is the basis of the group visit, maybe that comes into play. So we have done an exercise group visit, and then we can take them into even more granular topics. So for instance, we might do a group visit on exercise and teach them a little bit about the science and how that impacts, and then we might actually do, part of the 90-minute sequence, some exercises. And then we've decided to show them, like, okay, this is what cardiovascular would be, and this is how you would calculate your target heart rate, et cetera. So go through an experiential with them. But then we've taken it a step further and created a granular group visit, for instance, like how to exercise with poor knees or with low back pain. And so the modifications are modeled in the group visit so that they're empowered, and then they understand the anatomy of the loosening the hamstrings and tightening the quads and what's the proper formation. Don't go past your toe box. So then what people do is they do laugh together, they bond together because, you know, they're making mistakes together, but they're also learning together. And we do see people talking in the parking lot. What I do find is that a majority of our group visits tends to circle around better eating, whether we're picking a certain diet, like it could be autoimmune protocol or just being gluten-free or low glycemic. There's a social shift that has to occur when you become healthier.
Right.
I shouldn't say it has to occur, but it tends to occur. Your friends start to change a little bit. What you do socially changes. So they have this kind of core group that they started with. And I do see this parking lot collaboration occur quite a bit and they connect afterwards. But we don't kind of purposefully promote it. Because we want it to be organic.
Right, right. And what you're basically talking about really sits squarely in the stress and resilience node of the matrix, where by being with others, it's less isolating, it's more productive for the practitioner, but also more productive for the patients that are having an experience together and relating through the entire process.
Yes. And, you know, the other thing that I would say is that, and this is my disease, is that I feel like I have to fix everything and make everything better. And there are times where people just have problems that are not getting better in the time frame that they want them to get better, or maybe their expectations are a little bit higher than, quote unquote, they should be for the time capacity. And I think when they're in group medical appointments and they see somebody living with, let's say, MS, but you know, maybe they're not running a marathon, but they're so much more functional than they used to be. Maybe it's an easier pill to swallow for them to have the patience to kind of take this journey at the speed it unfolds. Whereas if I just say like, yeah, this is just what it is, of course, it doesn't come off empowering. So I think that helps with the stress and resilience because there's something about acceptance, which is a big portion of health, in my opinion, you know, the kind of the surrendering to the process.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think it's easier when you see somebody else modeling that versus a doctor or a nutritionist or a clinician saying, we just have to let it go.
Right.
Because it sounds condescending.
Yeah. It's really interesting what you're talking about with the acceptance and the surrender is always what I call managing the condition. And at a certain point, I was told that managing the condition was dirty language. Nobody wants that. They want to use sexier words like remission or fixed or bet, you know, they want to make it all better. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking like, oh, managing it is great. I have Hashimoto's and I manage it. I'm fine. But it is a hard pill to swallow. But what I'm really thinking about here as we kind of focus on that reduction of stress and that increase in resilience is how the group visits as a whole impact the entire body systems, because we know how much stress impacts our physiology, our GI function, our immune and inflammatory balance, our detoxification, our oxidative stress, our genetic expression. And so it's so interesting to see the kind of trickle effect of what you are creating with these group visits.
The thing that I've learned, and I'm sure you have too, and anybody who's been doing this long enough, we're first kind of enamored by the whole lifestyle medicine, like eat this way and fix your issue, or exercise or sleep this way. And then we realize that the mindset is so pivotal before you can sometimes even get significant traction on the nutrition, the exercise, the sleep. And so, yes, I agree with you. The way that I've kind of taught my patients and kind of the sticky phrase that I use is goodness. You've got to be good with yourself before you can handle the N of nutrition, the E of exercise, the S of stress management, and the S of sleep. So you got to have goodness in your life. And how do you get good with yourself? How are you good with who you are? Well, you've got to get your mess in order. So the M is for mental, E is for emotional, S is for spiritual, and the other S is for social. So once you get your mess in order, it's much easier to clean up your nest.
I love that. Beautifully said. Thank you so much, Dr. Saxena. What a pleasure to spend this time with you.
I appreciate it. It's so wonderful that there are people who are helping us deliver these things that we figure out in the office after just this service that we do, and we want to help other people. And I just think it's wonderful that you're putting this all together and creating a conversation so that we're not all on islands trying to figure this out ourselves, that we're really helping each other.
Yes, community for us too.
The 15-Minute Matrix is brought to you by me, Andrea Nakayama, and the Functional Nutrition Alliance. The 15-Minute Matrix team includes my son, Gilbert Nakayama, on sound production, Renee Hunt, Natalie Merrill, and Christine Shook. You can visit us and hear more episodes at 15minutematrix.com. And if you'd like to be notified each time there's a new podcast episode, please go to 15minutematrix.com/notify. We'll be sure to drop into your inbox with a super short reminder that a new episode is ready for you. Plus, please do email us. We want to hear what you love about the podcast, any suggestions you have, and particularly what you'd like to see mapped on the 15-Minute Matrix and who you'd like to hear me speak with. You can email us at ask@15minutematrix.com. That's ask@15minutematrix.com.